Okay, so I think everybody is familiar with the Gemara in Brachos, which says that it's always appropriate to begin a shiur with something of a light matter, a milsa de bichusa, a joke. You know, you've heard me enough to know that I'm not always so machmir on that Gemara. But, you know, when I think it really helps the shiur, you know, can't hurt. So let's start with, I don't know if it's a joke, but it's a story, and I think there's a humorous part, but we'll find out what you guys think in just a few moments, and hopefully it'll be a good and appropriate point of entry to the conversation that I want to have over the course of the next hour. So we're a family of early risers. My children in particular like to get up, you know, very early. The way that the ages work out, so we have 7, 5, 3, and 8 months. So I'm usually with the 7, 5, and 3-year-old, and my wife is usually with the 8-month-old, as it happens. And you know, that's sort of the breakdown. If you come to our house at 5 a.m, if you're interested, you know, you can experience this firsthand. And with the change of the clock this week, you could even do it at 4 a.m. You don't have to wait till 5, in case you're. You're interested for that. So we have a 3-year-old who we call the professor. The professor always wants to know how things work. So how do airplanes fly? What makes boats, you know, float on the water? Why don't they sink? See, you know, we call him the professor. He's very, very inquisitive. So he notices, you know, lots of different things about the world. And he's really like a student of the world in that way. So, you know, if I had to describe, you know, the difference between, let's say, what goes on in the early morning in our house versus in the evening, where I'm involved, but you know, my wife is more like, you know, running the scenario. So it's the difference between going to like a symphony orchestra, and we all know that there are winds and there's the brass section and there's the percussive and there's the string, and my wife, she can play all of them at the same time. Right? And that's what the conductor is supposed to do. The conductor comes in and they bring in the percussives now and the brass now and the winds now, and they all play together. The Aruch HaShulchan says in his Akdama to Choshen Mishpat, that's really what makes music beautiful, is when you have a conductor who can bring in all the instruments at the right time. So if that's sort of my wife, right? She's able to do that. My version is I can only do one thing at a time. So the kids know, you know, it instills patience and builds character, that I'm totally willing to make, you know, eggs for one of them and then help the other one with an art project and do parsha with a third. But it all has to be done serially, because unlike their mother, right, this is, you know, this is the maximum of my human capacity. So the professor recently turned to me in very, not no chutzpah whatsoever, in a very sincere an authentic way, just like his, if he was asking, you know, how do planes fly, or, you know, why does the boat float? So he turned to me and he said, "Daddy, why can't you do two things at once like mommy?" So the 7-year-old, the daughter, who is, you know, very, this is, you know, perfectly in character for her, so she's, you know, very protective of me. And she says, "David," that's the professor's, you know, given name, she says, "David, you can see Daddy's really trying his hardest." So she's very protective, right? But the truth is, right, to quote from the Gemara in Shabbos and Daf Lamed Aleph, if I wanted to say, and I did, "She'ila gedola sha'alta b'ni," right? I said, this is actually a very important observation, right? I can't, right? The best I can do is do things serially. And that's fine, you know, you just have to be more patient. It won't be as efficient. It'll be going like to, you know, a symphony orchestra that's just not as good, where the conductor can only appeal to the strings, and then they go over to the brass, and then they go over to the winds, and then they go over to the percussives, but they can't keep in their mind all of the different tasks at once. That's exactly the difference between going to a really good, you know, performance or going to something mediocre. So, you know, if you want to get up at 5 a.m, this is the best, you know, we have to offer right now. And, you know, okay, that's the way it works. I thought this was an important perspective, an important observation that my son was making. And I think that hopefully, as we'll see, this is a way of beginning a very significant conversation about the Torah's relationship with gender roles, a very important conversation, one that's hard to have. We live in a very reductionist world where the idea that there could be, axiological equivalence, fundamental equality in terms of the value of men and women, but complementary roles is like really under attack. If it's not exactly the same, we live in a Plessy versus Ferguson critical society, that there is no such thing as separate or distinctive but equal. That is the reality in which we find ourselves. So what I want to try to do today is to elaborate how I think that the Torah, in a very embracing and admiring way, understood the distinctive contribution of what I call here the Masorah of the Matriarchs. And I want to spend the better part of the next 50 minutes or so discussing how I think Chazal, based on the Psukim themselves, understood Sarah Yimeinu in particular to be an archetype. The truth is that each of the Imaos have their own contribution, but it's Parshas Vayera. We'll discuss it mostly through the lens of Sarah, to contributing to an understanding of what the unique contribution of the Imaos was, and what the ongoing contribution of Nashim to Klal Yisrael in a distinctive and particular way really is. And much of what I say has been inspired, though I hope to be original today as well, but much of what I say has been inspired by what is undoubtedly the most beautiful articulation of this notion of a dual or complementary Masorah, that which was articulated by the Rav on January 30th, 1977, in the context of his hesped for his Mechatenista, Rebbetzin Rivka Tursky, the Talna Rebbetzin. It was given in Congregation Beth David, which was then in Brookline, Massachusetts. It's since been relocated to Riverdale, New York, and it was reprinted in the famous 1978 edition of Tradition, the special edition that had five of the Rav's essays. We have two Masoros, the Rav wrote, two traditions, the Masoro community of the fathers and that of the mothers. Quoting from the Psukim right before Matan Torah, Pasuk says, Koso mar leves Yaakov, thus shalt thou say to the house of Jacob, which are the women, Beis Yaakov. That's why when they started women's schools, they called them Beis Yaakov. That wasn't so original, but it's a good title. And tell the children of Israel, right, Visage libnei Yisrael, hear my son the instruction of thy father, Shema b'ni Musar avicha, and forsake not the teaching of thy mother, Torah Simecha. One learns much from father, how to read a text, the Bible, the Talmud, how to comprehend, how to analyze, how to conceptualize, how to classify, how to infer, how to apply. One also learns from father what to do, what not to do, what is morally right, what is morally wrong. Father teaches the son the discipline of thought as well as the discipline of action. Father's tradition is an intellectual, moral one. That is why it is identified with Musar, Shema b'ni Musar Abicha, which is the biblical term for discipline. What is Torah Simecha? What kind of a Torah does the mother pass on? Permit me to draw upon my own experiences. I used to have long conversations with my mother. In fact, it was a monologue rather than a dialogue. She talked, and I happened to overhear. She talked, Meinyan de Yoma. I used to watch her arranging the house in honor of a holiday. I used to see her recite prayers. I used to watch her recite the Sidra every Friday night, and I still remember her nostalgic tune. I learned from her very much. Most of all, I learned that Judaism expresses itself not only in formal compliance with the law, but also in a living experience. She taught me that there's a flavor, a scent, and warmth to mitzvos. I learned from her the most important thing in life, to feel the presence of the Almighty and the gentle pressure of his hand resting upon my frail shoulders. The fathers knew much about Shabbos. The mothers lived the Shabbos, experienced her presence, and perceived her beauty and splendor. These stirring words provide the idea and concept of complementary roles, right? Especially in a parental or educational framework where the father transmits the knowledge, the know-how, but in terms of the kiyum shebalev, something the Rav was very fond of in many, many different contexts and many mitzvos, the inner religious experience, the Rav credited that to his mother's contribution to his spiritual development. I'd like to take things in a slightly different direction with great admiration. Again, I don't think anything that I would have said would have been possible without the Rav sort of pointing me and us in this direction. But I'd like to revisit the Rav's particular typology through an analysis of the persona of Sarah Imenu and draw some, I think, parallel but maybe distinctive conclusions about the idea of complementary roles, the unique contribution of what I call the Masorah of the matriarchs, starting with Sara Imenu. Let me just add one point about the Rav's analysis here, which I think is important and a good point of departure as well. The Rav goes on to suggest that there are three constitutive elements of what the Torah Simecha is about. Three different parts of what made Rebbetzin Twersky and his mother part of this Masorah. He starts with the idea from the Navi Shmuel of an Isha Chachama, intelligence, wisdom, Torah knowledge. You can't impart religious experience without having, a certain foundation of knowledge. And he talks about that as clearly very, very significant. Number two, he talks about the idea of Isha Gidolav, a kind of a spiritual greatness. He identifies with the virtue of self-sacrifice, of Mesiras Nefesh, of putting others first. And then he talks about the virtue of dignity, Isha Chashuva. This will resonate not from biblical sources, but from the Gemara. The Gemara in Pesachim, very famously in Daf Kuf Ches, talks about whether or not women should lean during the Seder, the question of Heseba. And the Gemara says, an Isha Chashuva, a dignified woman should. The Gemara doesn't tell us, who meets the standard of a dignified woman. The Rama says, all of our Nashim are dignified, which is a good and appropriate thing to say for many reasons. But, the term is Omer Darsheni. It's a very curious and enigmatic expression. What is an Isha Chashuva? And the Rav tries to speak about a certain dignity that he beheld in, the women that he knew, the woman that he was being maspid, the woman that raised him, etc. So you have that threefold dynamic. I'm going to appeal to a different model, but I just wanted to acknowledge that the Rav, spoke in terms of those three components. Joseph, do you have a question?
While there are certainly two types of Torah, one the Rav calls Imecha and one the Rav calls Imecha, there really isn't, I don't want to make it, why is there a need to assign one of them to women and one of them to men, other than the fact we have Imecha and Avicha? And hasn't our current experience shown us that women can do the Torah Sovicha and men can do the Torah Simecha? So you could address that perhaps as we go.
Okay, good. Yeah, I'm going to try to get to that. Both the question of to what extent is there a necessity, and then if there is a necessity, how do we want to divide things up? Okay, so you'll see how much my scheme addresses that satisfactorily or not. Okay, so let's begin with the beginning of the Sedra, which will be, a good point of departure for, again, something which is inspired by the Rav, but not exactly the same. The Torah tells us, you have this in the first source, you also have the English translation, if you want. Famously have this image of Avraham Avinu sitting at the entrance of the Ohel. He sees what appears to be three men. As we all know, it seems like a wonderful opportunity to be machnes orchem. Vayomru, and they say, okay, kein tase kasher dibarta. So vayimaher Abraham, Abraham's alacrity and his rizus, right, caught the attention of Chazal here in a very significant way, right? He after all, was in their tradition, yom shlishi lemilaso, that he was only recently, post-operative, and yet, for purposes of chesed, he was indefatigable. Vayimaher Abraham ha'ohela el Sarah. Sarah, as Chazal noted, was in the Ohel. Vayomer Mahari Shloshim Kamachsoles Lushi Vasyu Gos. And he says, quickly, we have the opportunity, and he wants her to bake, for the occasion. Veil HaBakar Ratz Avraham. Avram continues on. Vayikach Ben Bakar Rach Vato Vayitein Alanar Vayimoher Laso Soso. Vayikach Hema V'chalav Uven HaBakar Asher Asa Vayitein Lifnehem V'hu Omeid Alehem Tachas Ho'etz Vayochelu. And Avram attends to them, right? He plays the role not only of server but waiter, attending to them underneath the tree. Vayomru Elav, and they said to Avram, Ayei Sarai Ishtacha, as if They didn't know. Vayomer, in his response, picking up on exactly what we observed previously, Hine va'ohel. Vayomer shovashuv elecha ka'is chaya. So one of the three, you know that they're angels. Avram thinks that they're men at this point, presumably. Vihine vein l'sara yishtecha. And then for the third time, the Torah says, V'sara shamas pesach ha'ohel v'hu acharav. Sarah hears it from the ohel. In other words, the first image we have of Sarah Imenu in Parshas Vayera is inextricably linked three times in the Chumash with the term ohel. Avram is pesach ha'ohel. He's outside, sort of interacting with the world out there, obviously for good purposes, trying to do chesed. And Sarah, clearly as an equal partner, we know that from the text, involved in the chesed, in her own way, is situated in the ohel. Rashi comments, Hineva ohel, tsnuahi. That this is a reflection of deep modesty. Now the image of ohel, which is so fundamental here to our introduction to Sarah in Parshas Vayera, of course, plays an equally dramatic role in the next phase of the imahos, the establishing the second generation, in a very dramatic way. Torah tells us, you have in the third source, this is in Parshas Chayisara, so we'll get to it next week, that when Yitzchak meets Rivka, very beautiful and poignant pasuk, Vayivya Yitzchak ha'ohela Sarah imo. Sarah, who's so defined, occupied, characterized the ohel, now Rivka is brought into that sacred space. Vayivya Yitzchak ha'ohela Sarah imo. Vayikaches Rivka vatihilo liisha vayeha veha. Vayinachem Yitzchak acharei imo. And there was something about this experience, and it was such a beautiful idea, that gave Yitzchak heretofore unknown consolation for the loss of his beloved mother when he saw Rivka in the tent. And of course, the question very much is, you know, what exactly is the substance of that image? Now, I see here that I think, maybe, I'm not sure if when the copies were made, so I think we lost, a number of the sources. It was two-sided. Okay, so if you have it online, what's that? Oh, it is there? Okay, so it's just inverted. Okay, that's much better than not being there altogether. Okay, so if people can manage this, you just have to find, you know, the number four. Okay, so the Torah tells us, and we'll get back to, you know, the image of Rivka and the ohel, because it's really a linchpin for the entire discussion. So this is now in the next phase of, you know, the transition between Rivka and the third and fourth of the imahos, Rachel and Leah, or if you prefer, Leah and Rachel. So the Torah tells us, Vayavo Lavan be'ohel Yaakov, this is during the search for the Trafim, uve'ohel Leah, uve'ohel shteya mahos v'lo matza, vayitze me'ohel Leah, vayavo be'ohel Rachel. Right? We know that Lavan infiltrates and sort of searches out the ohalim, including the ohel of Rachel and the ohel Leah. Vayichal Yaakov, and this set Yaakov off. Yaakov, just a few times in Sefer Bereishis, gets very angry. This is one of them. This idea of, you know, Lavan going into Rachel's tent and Leah's tent. So Vayichal Yaakov vayareb Lavan vayan Yaakov vayomer Lavan ma pishim achatasi ki dalakta acharai. He experiences Lavan's search, in particular of the ohel, seems to me, as particularly invasive, as invading a very sacred space and crossing a certain boundary, and that's what, you know, triggers a very angry reaction on his part. Chazal saw in a later pasuk in Tanakh from Sefer Shoftim this linking of Sarah Imenu first and subsequently Rivka, and then at a tertiary level Rachel and Leah with the ohel. They heard echoes of this in Shiras Devorah. Devorah was singing of the strength and valor of Yael in killing Sisera. Tivorach minashim Yael, eshes chever akeni, minashim ba'ohel tivorach. She is blessed, minashim ba'ohel. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin asks, this is the sixth source, Tivorach min Hashim Yael Eishes Chaver Akeni min Hashim Ba'Oel Tivorach Nashim Ba'Oel Ma Ninhu. What do you mean Nashim Ba'Oel? Who are the Nashim of the tent? And the answer is, as we understand very well, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Velaya. In other words, what Devorah was articulating was that Yael had entered a certain pantheon. Yael, in her valor, in her courage, in acting the way that she did, very complex story, the Gemara Nivamos and Daf Kuf Gimel, we're not going to have that conversation right now about what Yael did exactly, but extremely courageous, a lot of self-sacrifice was involved, but she entered a certain rarefied space, the Nashim Ba'ohel. She became part of this, what I call Masorah of the Matriarchs, the Torah Simecha chain that the Rav alluded to. Devorah thinks that Yael has become part of that, Minashim Ba'ohel Tevorach. Of course, Yael committed her mitzvah, you know, the great salvation, in her ohel, so that's also part of the imagery here, but we should understand why Chazal have a particular association, Sarah Rivka, Rachel, Vileya. So let's go back now to the first transition to understand what the significance of the ohel was. When we talk about Hinei Va'ohel, that Sarah defines the ohel, what exactly does that mean? So if you look at the Bereishis Rabbah, if you look at this Medrash, there are four dimensions. I think each of them is very significant, and I think they all become typological in terms of helping us to understand what the unique, particular contribution of the Imahos was and what Nashim continued to be to the Jewish religious experience. Vayaviya Yitzchak Ha'Oel Asaraimo. So the Medrash says, Rashi quotes only an excerpt of this Medrash, so it's always better, if possible, to see the primary source. Kol Yamim Shehaisa Sarah Kayemes, as long as Sarah was alive, Haya Anan Kashur Al Pesach Ahalo. That there was an anan, literally a cloud. A cloud in biblical terms always signifies, right, God's presence. The Amud Anan, Har Sinai, Hashem is Yored Ba'esh V'Anan, the Arafel that's on top of the mountain. This is something of a truism, right? In Chazal, when it says that Avram saw the Makom Erachok, you remember at the end of this week's Parsha, Rashi quotes, how did he know which was the right mountain? Ra Anan Kashur Alahar. It's always a symbol of God's presence. Ki Be'anan E'ra'eh Ala Kaporis. You have it in Parshas Noach, as Kashtina Tati Be'anan, all of them before she make the same observation there, that the Anan is a symbol of God's presence. So number one, what Sarah was able to evoke in her lifetime, and then unfortunately, you know, after her passing, it just wasn't there, nobody could generate it the same way Avram was unable to, was a sense of the divine presence, which is symbolized by this Anan Kashur Al Pesach Ahala. Kevan Shemesa Pasak Oso Anan. It was indelible. It was unique to Sarah Imeni. V'kevan Shabas Rivka Chazar Oso Anan. Facet number one. Kol Yamim Shaisa Sarah Kayemes Hayud Lasos Psuchos L'Rivacha. When Sarah was alive, so the tent was open. We always credit Avram with that, but the Medrash says no. If you want to understand the chesed orientation of the household, that really was Sarah's contribution. The idea of the house as a place that can take care of others as a catalytic or projective element of chesed, psuchos l'rivacha, that too was Sarah's contribution. V'kevan shemesa Sarah, paska osa harivacha. V'kevan shabas rivka, chazra osa harivacha. So we see that that returned. Somehow Yitzchak was able to perceive that. Chol yamim, number three. Shehaisa Sarah kayemes haya bracha, Mushlachas Ba'isa. There was a sense of the stability of the household in terms of basic parnasa, that the bread was, mivorach, whatever that means, but, whatever it was that, you know, Avram brought home, Sarah was able to take that into, you know, as my grandmother, blessed memory, would say, to manage, right, to make things, put it together, the bracha, mushlachas Ba'isa. V'kevan shemesa Sarah, pasko sa bracha, this wasn't there anymore. V'kevan shabas Rivka, chazra. And Rivka was able to re-engage that third dimension as well. Kol yamim shehaisa Sarah kayemes haya ner dolek milele Shabbos v'ad lele Shabbos kevan shemesa pasak oso aner kevan shebas Rivka chazar. The light that Chazal affiliate inescapably, inexorably with Torah, kiner mitzvah v'Torah, or that light was gone, and when Rivka came onto the historical scene, Rivka was able to catalyze or re-energize this particular element. So if you were to ask me, what does it mean that Sarah and subsequently Rivka and then Rachel and Leah, the Nashim Ba'ohel, what does that really mean? To me it means, not as the Rav had three elements, but I would say four elements. That Chazal understood that as far as the home is concerned, the very spirituality, the anan kashur, the sense of it being a makom kadosh, a sacred space, that is to be attributed to Sarah Imenu in her generation and on down. The sense of it being a place of chesed is also to be attributed, despite the fact that Avram, as we know, was a great Ava chesed. Sarah was really the one that Chazal deemed was primarily responsible for the home being pasuach l'revacha. Number three, and this is really captured very beautifully about the Eish HaSchayil. Rabbi Simon was talking a little bit yesterday. Maybe some people are going to give up on Eish HaSchayil because of Yekadesh Miyad, the importance of making the Kiddush right away. But the Eish HaSchayil, if you sing it or you study it, you see how much of it is about the woman's role in terms of efficiency, making economic progress on behalf of the household and making sure that everything is in order and taken care of. And number four, Ner Dolek Mele LeShabbos, the sense of the Torah defining the household, the illumination of Torah, Chazal ascribed to Sarah Imenu, and I think in a typological sense, Minashim Ba'ohel Tevorach, subsequently to all of the women, the first transition being Sarah to Rivka, but in all subsequent generations. The Malbim, in fact, seems to have understood the same way in his commentary in Sefer Tehillim. The Malbim says, "Benosenu domim kizavios shehem echutavos tavnis heichal," quoting a pasuk in Sefer Tehillim that we all know, "ki tavnis heichal yilakach mina zavios." Zavios, obviously, is the corner. Zavis is a corner, so the corner element. "Im asoi biyosher ki hem tznuos yoshvos biyarkes habayis." Women are often behind the scenes. "V'chol zeh heim yitnu tachnis heichal kulo." The entire structure, the entire edifice, rests on their contribution. If the house is to stand, it is to stand on the basis of the cornerstone. And that is the image the Malbim perceived in this pasuk in Tehillim, "Binosenu kizavios tavnis heichal." They lend this structure, which I'm dividing into four constitutive elements in terms of the anan, the presence of Hashem, in terms of chesed, psucha l'revacha, in terms of the economy and efficiency of the household, bracha mushlachas ba'isa, and indeed, Torah illuminating the entire household, ner dolek milele Shabbos, lilele Shabbos. A very fascinating image if we go back to Parshas Lech Lecha for a moment, after perhaps, according to the Ramban, the biggest mistake of Avram's life, when the Ra'av comes, we know that Avram chooses to leave Eretz Canaan and he descends to Egypt. And the Ramban says that this was a very serious offense, not a malicious offense. It was bishgaga. Avram didn't mean, to do the wrong thing, but he did the wrong thing in two very fundamental ways. First of all, the abandonment of Eretz Yisrael during a time of crisis. And number two, that he put Sarah in a terrible situation because, of course, she was taken by Paro. And that both of these were very, very, very serious offenses for which Avram would pay a very steep price, the Ramban writes. Now, if you follow the end of that story, so God spares Avram and Sarah, and they come back to Canaan, as we know. And the Torah tells us the following, which you have in the eighth source. "Vayatek misham hahara." And Avram ascends from Egypt, and they go back to the mountain area. "Mikedem leveisel." Vayet ahalo. Now it's spelled in the feminine. Beisel miyam v'amikedem vayiven sham izbeach Adonai vayikra b'shem Adonai. Avram returns to exactly the place where he was before he went down to Egypt. There's literally a tshuva movement here. He understands that he did something wrong. Right? Rashi comments ahaloksiv b'tchila natalas ahal ishto v'acharkach eshalo. So this has traditionally been interpreted to be some kind of an act of etiquette or chivalry, right? They were traveling, so first thing he did is he set up Sarah's, tent, and then he worried about his own luggage. I perceive it in far more fundamental terms. I think Avram recognized that he had made a very significant mistake, as the Ramban notes. The Aveira was a grievous one, particularly in the position that he put his wife in, and he took greater stock and greater awareness of her ohel. That is to say, her contribution. It wasn't just, hopefully it would be enough for him to pitch her tent first so she could, you know, get some rest after traveling. But I think Avram understood in a much deeper way the importance of Sarah's ohel, what that meant in terms of the role of God in their lives, what that meant in terms of chesed, what that meant in terms of the economy or the efficiency, and what that meant indeed in terms of his own capacity to project Torah. We know very well that indeed Sarah was a full partner with Avram in this respect. So we have here in the 10th source a reference to last week's Sedra, Es HaNefesh Asher Asu V'Charan. The Avos Reb Nasan tells us, based on Mishnah Perkei Avos, Oy V'Sabrios and Mekarvan LaTorah Ketzad. So how exactly do we bring people close to Torah? So Melamed She Adam B'Kapeach HaSabrios U'Machnisan Tachas Kan V'Yashchina K'derech She Avram Avinu. Just as Avram Avinu did, Avram was able to bring people in. V'lo Avram Levada Sala Af Sara Shenemar V'Yikach Avram Es Sara Yishto V'Eslot Ben Achiv Es Kol Rechusham Asher Achashu V'Es HaNefesh Asher Asu V'Charan. Rashi amplifies this Avos Reb Nasan in a very celebrated passage. You have it here in the 12th source. Asher Asu V'Charan. She'echnisan Tachas Kanfei Hashchina. Avram Megayer Es Hanashim V'Sara Megayer Es Hanashim. That Avram interacted with the men and had an educational role in that regard, and Sarah had an equal role with respect to bringing the women closer, right? She wasn't a tag-along. She was every bit an equal on Avram's mission, right? Avraham Ohavi, to bring Avas Hashem to the world. Sarah was an indispensable part of that. Sarah Megayeres Hanashim, Umale Aleim Akosov Ki'ilu Asa'um. And that's why, even though, of course, they didn't have, at this stage, biological children, they had, right, spiritual children, Es HaNefesh Asher Asu V'Charan. The image we have of not somebody, you know, who is there, as important as it is to do chesed, Lushi V'Asiu Gos, but a woman of great intelligence, a woman of great insight, someone who is an indispensable and equal partner to Avram Avinu in his life mission. When Avram neglected that, when he, not maliciously, but he put Sarah in an untenable position, he came to appreciate the gravity of his mistake, what the Ramban refers to as the chet gadol, albeit bishgaga. And I think what Chazal really captured was the idea that upon ascending from Egypt and returning in this tshuva movement, vayet ahalo, he takes greater stock and a greater awareness of the indispensable contribution that Sarah Imenu has had to his success. It's an interesting thing. I'm not going to read it inside, but to raise, you know, further consciousness, let's say, about this particular point, when the Rambam discusses Avram's, you know, early career, he talks about Avram being in Ur Kasdim in a very confrontational kind of a way. You know, Avram is there and he's arguing with people and he's having polemics and debates and he's breaking idols. This is one of the few places where the Rambam, you know, paskins the Agada. And then, you know, when Avram Avinu transitions from Ur Kasdim and he comes to Haran and to Eretz Canaan, you know, his style seems to have completely changed in a very odd way. He's no longer arguing with people, but the Rambam portrays him as like, you know, a pedagogue par excellence. He's melamed l'chol echad ve'echad kefi dato. He meets every person where they are. He sort of answers their questions. He brings them in, you know, in a completely different way. The Rambam doesn't explain, you know, minohani mile. Where did this come from? What happened to the great iconoclast, you know, throwing idols around and, you know, engaging in arguments? You know, did Avram just mellow with age? I don't know. The Rambam doesn't address it. But I have, you know, my suspicions that, you know, perhaps there was a very important influence, somebody who showed him that there was another way of bringing people, Sarah Megayeres Es Hanashim. I wonder to what extent that impacted his development, improved his capacity to be Machnes Nefashos Tachas Kanfei Hashchina. After all, one gets further most of the time with understanding, with empathy, with engagement than one does with confrontation itself. Something to consider. Now, I'd like to move from what I've tried to catalog here as the four distinctive or constitutive parts of the Nashim Ba'ol, the four areas where Chazal appreciated that Sara Yimeinu and Sara Yimeinu alone could provide, the sense of Shechina, the sense of Torah, the sense of Chesed, and indeed the sense of economy or efficiency in Kemach, in Torah, after all, that were all part of, you know, her contribution. To put a little bit of a finer point on something that I think, you know, is inescapable from Sefer Bereishis and speaks to a particular motif that we find in Chazal. So if you take a look here, it's just above the 14th source. Sorry, I forgot to give this one a number. This is the Gemara in Maseches Nida and Daf Memhei. Somehow the stapling inverted. So this is just above the 14th source. Amar of Chista. What did Rabbi Yehuda Nasi mean when he said, "Va'even Hashem Elokim Esatzela Melamed Shenasna Kadosh Baruch Hu Bina Yisera Beish Beisha"? Excuse me, Yoser Mi Baish. This is a famous comment of Chazal. What we call Bina Yisera Banashim, that there's a certain insight that women have that men lack. This is a comment that Chazal make. So the question is, you know, what is the direction of this Bina? This is sort of what we would call, in halachic terminology, is this a din kwali? Is this just a general observation? Would you say that this applies across all areas? You know, it's election day, so I don't know, they have better insight into like who the right candidates to vote for are. Is it, you know, do they have better economic policies? So I don't think so. I think it's really a much more targeted statement, and I'll try to elaborate on that in light of a critical episode in this week's parsha. And a similar episode, very controversial one, two parashios from now, where I think we see Sarah and Rivka taking this Bina Yisera in a very specific direction with a very particular application. So this is now the 14th source. Vatera Sarah, Sarah saw, she perceived. Right? This doesn't mean she saw in the sense that her optical nerve was processing the images. I mean, it means that she understood something. Right, very often the shorish of ri'ya in the Chumash connotes perception, perspective, awareness. Vatera Sarah ben Hagar haMitzrius asher yaldali Avraham mitzachek. So she saw that whatever it was, there was something untoward about Yishmael's development. Vatomer leAvraham gareish haMazos v'espina ki lo yirash ben haMazos im bini im Yitzchak. And she tells Avram to do something which is excruciating for him, that he has to really make a terrible choice, but he has to send away Yishmael and Hagar. Vayira davar me'od b'nei Avraham alodos b'no. And unsurprisingly, as we would have anticipated, it's excruciating for Avram to have to do this. And Hashem intercedes, right? It's a terrible thing to have to send away a child, no matter, you know, what that child's spiritual development is or isn't, what their potential is or isn't, right? Vayomer Elohim el Avraham, Al yira be'nechal hanar v'al masacha kol asher tomari lecha Sarah shma bekola. Whatever Sarah tells you, listen to her. Ki v'yitzchak yikari lecha zara. Rashi comments in a very broad way, shma bekola, right? Lamadnu shaya Avram tafel l'sara b'nevius. Rashi's comment, understood simply, is that Sarah was a greater prophetess than Avram was a prophet, in which case, right, her view is dispositive. Myself, I'm not convinced that that's the proper way to understand Rashi. It seems to me a very difficult contention to support that across the board, Sarah Yimeinu was a greater prophetess than Avram was a Navi. However, if one limits the field of play to the trajectory of the family, Hineva Ohel, how are we going to raise this family? What are the needs of the family at this time? I understand Rashi to be articulating not a din klali, not a general principle, but a very specific one, a din prati. That is to say, that with respect to the critical decisions facing the family, what could be more critical than this decision? Sarah Yimeinu, indeed, the Bina Yisera Banashim, she had greater insight as to what the direction of the family needed to be at this critical juncture. That is to say, if I'm correct, that Chazal's comment about the Bina Yisera Banashim wasn't meant to be understood ubiquitously or pervasively in every area, but in particular as it relates to the area that we delineated before, the Ohel itself. What are the needs of this family? If Avram, to capture some of the Rav's language, is Yoshev b'Pesach ha'ohel, at the interface between the ohel and general society, hineva ohel. Sarah is ensconced, rooted in the ohel. She's the one that has the greater contribution to the spirituality of the home, and indeed the greater insight into the direction that family life needs to take. It's not an isolated example. As we know, a similar conflict emerges in the next generation. And Rivka Imenu, right, puts her foot down and says that things, the methods are indeed controversial. It's not my subject for now. But Rivka, as we know, you have it in the 16th source, interesting just to take a look at in light of this, you know, argument. Rivka Imenu determines the future course of the ohel, as it were, the future course of family. V'rivka shomas b'daber Yitzchak el Esav b'no, v'yilach Esav ha'sadeh l'tzut zayid l'havi. V'rivka amra al Yaakov b'no l'mor, hine shamati esavicha midaber l'Esav achicha l'mor. V'yata v'ni shma b'koli l'asher ani mitzava osach. Rivka is unequivocal. Lechna l'atzon v'kachli misham shnei g'dayezim tuvim v'esosam atamim l'avicha kasher ahev. Right, Yaakov is afraid for good reason. He's uncomfortable for good reason. Right, even pragmatically, how is this going to work once I'm exposed as a fraud? This is no time to be afraid of those ramifications. This is a time for decisive action. We have to ensure the continuity of the family, and my vision is the vision that you have to follow. Ach shma b'koli v'lech kachli. As the narrative continues on, we're so familiar with it. V'yugad Rivka es divrei Esav b'no ha'gadol, v'tishlach v'tikra li Yaakov b'no ha'katan. Rivka, right, hears that Esav is planning to kill Yaakov. Right, v'tomer elav hine Esav achicha misnachem lecha lehargecha. So once again, she casts the die, v'yata v'ni shema b'koli, exactly the same language as we had before, v'kum b'rach lecha elavan achi charana. You have to now leave the home. Rivka loves Yaakov very much. It's not pleasant for her to have to send her son away, but if this is what's going to ensure the long-term survival of the family, she acts with profound mesiras nefesh, self-sacrifice. She would never see him again in her life. We have to accept and appreciate the sacrifice from her point of view, but the future of the family was at stake. Rivka sacrificed everything in terms of her personal relationship with Yaakov for the historical emergence of Yaakov Avinu as she understood it. And then Rivka turned to Yitzchak to explain all of this. Yitzchak, who didn't have the information at the time, obviously, but Tomer Rivka Yitzchak katzi v'chayai mipnei benos cheis im lokeach Yaakov isha benos cheis ka'elem im nos aretz lamali chayim. The way that Rivka explains it, which is true in its own right, but it doesn't give the full context to Yitzchak, as she says, it's you know, intolerable to me that Yaakov will marry somebody who is not spiritually, you know, appropriate for Eretz Canaan, and that, you know, of course, Yitzchak endorses, and as we know, sends Yaakov on his way. So here we have, you know, the great insight of Rivka, the decisiveness of Rivka. I'm not saying for a moment that the methods aren't controversial, they assuredly are, but she was absolutely committed to this path. That is to say, both Sarah Imenu and Rivka Imenu, when it comes to a divergence of views as to how the family needs to navigate its own destiny at critical junctures, have very different visions than their husbands. And indeed, their visions have to prevail. Hine va'ohel. The direction of the family must be determined by the one who defines the ohel, by the Sarah Imenu, by the Rivka Imenu, by Yivyal Yitzchak Ha'ohel Sarah Imo, right? In each generation, Minashim Ba'ohel Tevorach, from Sarah Rivka Rachel Leah down to Yael, the basic future of the family, you know, has to be determined by the representative of the Ohel, which of course, Bina Yaseir Benashim, if we're correct, is not a general principle, but it actually relates to this idea of determining the family. Now, the next piece, if you see here, this is the 17th source, was sort of inspired by a comment that the Sforno makes, but I'd like to take it further than he did as we, you know, begin to sort of, you know, come to some conclusions here over the last 10 minutes or so. We all know that Chava played a very significant, and I would say even, you know, grievous role in the primordial chet, in the chet of the Eitz Hadas. She was involved in the chet herself, and she, you know, got her husband, Adam HaRishon, involved. And for this, she's punished in two different ways. If you take a look here at the 17th source, we find the following. El HaIsha Amar. So God says to the Isha, she's actually not yet named Chava at this stage, which is a shir in its own right. Harbar ba'itzvonech v'heronech ba'etzev tildivanim. So the first part is sort of an internal punishment that now when you conceive and give birth will be, you know, extremely painful. Ve'eli sheikh teshukaseich v'hu yimshol bach. And as far as your relationship with your husband is concerned, instead of being a relationship of two equals, Ezer Kenegdo, however we understand that phrase, there's going to be a certain hierarchy in that relationship. He will be the Moshel, he will rule over you. The Sforno comments, specifically in the context of Sara Imenu, Uveirach Tiha, this comes from the end of last week's parsha, when we're told that Sara is going to be able to have children. So the Sforno makes really a groundbreaking, revolutionary statement, Uveirach Tiha, Beheirayon uveleida begidol haben shelo betzar hefech kilalas chava beamaro beetzev til divanim veamar shesara tahar tolid utegadilas bina shelo betzar. The Sforno says the bracha that was given to Sara Imenu was literally a reversal of the curse of Chava, that she would be able to conceive, gestate, deliver, and raise a child without the suffering associated with the klal of chav. In other words, contrary to the conventional wisdom that this is now sort of baked in, this is inextricably linked with, you know, female experience, at least in the context of Sara Imenu, there was a reversal of that klala. But what about the other component? What about ve'eli sheikh teshuka seich v'hu yimshol bach? The Sforno doesn't relate to that. But it seems to me that the life of Sara, especially what we just articulated, the idea that Sarah's vision was going to determine the future of the Oel, Kol Asher Tomar Lecha, Sarab Shma Bekola, points to a reversal in terms of the hierarchy as well. That not only is Sarah co-equal, Avram Megayeres Anashim, Sarah Megayeres Anashim, but specifically as it relates to family destiny, the woman's voice, the voice of the Sarah, the Hineva Oel, the voice of Rivka, has to be the dispositive voice. Even when, especially when, the means are extreme, even controversial, their vision, the Bina Yisera with which they've been endowed, allows them to have a deeper perspective into the critical junctures, decisions that need to be made in terms of the future of the family. As far as Avram and Sarah were concerned, in that critical way, there was no Vehu Yimshol Bach. Sarah's vision ultimately carried the day. And the same thing played out in the context of Yitzchak and Rivka, and if you accept the argument that I'm making, as far as the critical decisions facing the family, we have a typology here, an archetype and a precedent that it's not just that you know, she has a voice, but her voice represents, you know, the Bina Yisera, the greater insight, the correct path as far as the transmission of the Masoros is concerned. It was true in the first generation, true in the second generation, and to me, it would be perpetually on that basis. One final observation before we conclude. We know that the institution of Hesped, the institution of eulogy, is introduced in Parshas Chayisara. It will be introduced next week, specifically in the context of Sara Imenu. There are no prior Hespedim in the Torah. Hesped is a very great obligation. The Gemara in Sanhedrin and Daf Memvav defines it as Yikara Deshechvi, a way of paying honor and credit to the life of the dearly departed. But it requires an insight to that life, to what it represented, what made it unique, inimitable. Every human being, of course, is an Olam Malay, is a whole world. But the institution of Hesped really requires an enormous effort. Chazal speak in very grave terms. The Gemara Shabbos Kofhei comes to mind about somebody who's misatzel, something for all rabbis to be aware of, the effort that's required to put into a hesped to determine what made a person unique and distinctive, who they were, not to speak in generic platitudes. The Ramban writes the following. Hine Sara Mesa Ba'ohel Asher La. Sarah died where she lived, in the Ohel, in the space that she came to define. V'nichnas Avram ba'oel, and Avram entered that space, lisbod osa, right? And he came there to, that's what it means, vayavo Avraham lisbod osa, he entered that space. Oh, alternatively, the Ramban says, yelashon vayavo, lomar shenis orer Avraham, lehesped osa, that Avram gathered his strength and his energy, v'hischil lasoso. He's called Miss Ora Umaschil B'Malacha. The Ramban uses that term Bedavka. This creative, important intellectual gesture Yikare Ba Eleha. That is to say that Avram had to marshal all of his emotional and intellectual strength to be able to define who Sarah Imenu was, what her contribution was to the Masorah. I don't think it's arbitrary or accidental that the institution of Hesped is introduced in relation to a woman. In particular, to Sarah Imenu. It's easier to detect, superficially, the contributions of those who may be more in a spotlight, often might have more of a public and interactive role, though that's not exclusive. It's easier sometimes to quote those statistics and to talk about those things. But the inimitable contribution, the Anan Kashur Al HaOhel, the Ner Daluk Me'erev Shabbos L'Erev Shabbos, the Bracha Mitzuya B'Isa, the Oel Psuach L'Revacha, those indelible, intangible qualities that Sarah contributed in her own way were, as far as many people were concerned, inscrutable, unknowable. Only Avram could detect them, and only he could articulate them, but it was with great effort, because these things, by definition, weren't necessarily quantifiable. They certainly weren't visible outside of the walls of that particular ohel. But of course, that doesn't make them any less significant. We know, historically, they were the most important of all. It captured the trajectory of the family, Kivi Yitzchak Yikari L'Chazara. In the next generation, it would reiterate itself in terms of the emergence of Yaakov Avinu. And so it has been throughout Jewish history, Minashim Ba'ohel Tivorach. The contribution might be a more subtle one, but subtlety in no way adumbrates or equates to importance. That which is sometimes hineva ohel tsnuahi, that which is more concealed, can be of the greatest import and ultimately the greatest influence. When Chazal saw and perceived both in our imahos and then building off of them a special bina yisera, they understood very well the contribution to Jewish family trajectory, and when you put it together, interlinked families as we are, Jewish national trajectory, that each of these Nashim Ba'ohel represents. One final example as we conclude, Bishvil Nashim Tzidkanios Nigalu Avosenu Mimitzrayim. The Gemara in Sota explains that each woman privately, in the context of her own family, was able to encourage her husband, who had long since despaired of his own life, and certainly of future, to invest in the future in their own very special, inimitable way, and the aggregate of those Nashim Ba'ohel, each one acting privately, modestly, independently, the aggregate impact of that was, of course, Yitzias Mitzrayim in its own right. These discreet, modest acts, sometimes hidden from the public at the time, but exposed at a later point for all to see, become the inflection points of our national story. They reflect an idea of Torah Simecha, of Nashim Ba'ohel, which, as I say, has different constitutive parts, but the sum is really more, or the whole is more than just the sum of the parts. It represents an abiding reverence and respect that Chazal had for the contribution of these women in particular, the contribution of women today, Avram Megayeres HaNashim, Sarah Megayeres HaNashim, and more, the dispositive voice of the woman in all matters concerning the Ohel. Thank you very much.